19.
And on the 19th episode, they got a sponsor.
Dun, dun, dun.
Can you believe it?
I can't. I can't believe it. It's surreal.
It is surreal. I'm super grateful. Excuse me. And apparently congested. But, you know, those go hand in hand.
It's a never-ending chest cold for you.
It honestly is. With three kids, it's just dance of the germs.
Yeah, the exchange.
Yeah, the exchange.
It's like a tango, really.
It is a tango. It's just like, who's sick this week? And between the five of us, one of us is like, tag, you're it, bitch.
Do you want to out our sponsor?
I do.
You want to do the honors?
I mean, I can't believe it's real life. And special shout out to Ashley, who made this happen. And our sponsor for the next 12 episodes is Spindrift. My yes. all-time favorite drink.
Your all-time fave thing.
Yes. And I just couldn't, when I got the email and we were working it out, and I actually spoke on the phone and I was like, I cannot believe this is real life. And sometimes I feel like that's just a great reminder about recovery. Like, sure. You never know how it's going to unfold. Now, mind you, what I love about Spindrift, it's a small company. There's only 11 people in their office working in their office.
I love it. It's that small business feel.
Totally. And so like when you like, she's like, here's my cell phone number. So just not this big corporate machine, just this like very down to earth company that I just happen to love their drink. Lime specifically is my
specifically
favorite.
Specifically lime.
All time
I need
drink.
To go. I need to do a like. Go through. I need to get as many flavors as I can and do just like a taste test and go through.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I think there's something for everyone. But and don't get it twisted. We're not on a yacht, people. Spindrift is just really supportive of what we're doing, and the community that we've built, and they're just helping covering the costs of production.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're super grateful. I'm literally in the storage room of my basement right now. I'm not being sarcastic. There is a box spring.
There is.
Behind me.
I can see it.
So that is a testament to the grassroots nature.
Totally.
Of our little pod here. But I am also so grateful for the opportunity to be supported by a lovely company. So
yeah,
it's exciting.
It is exciting. It's exciting. And I was asking you before we got on here, if you said one of your favorite interviews with Chelsea Handler is with Harry Styles.
Correct.
And I know you're a big House of Harry fan.
Love my Harry.
Did you have some feelings about his Grammy wins?
I had all of the feelings about all of the wins, and I am on the Harry side of TikTok.
Yeah,
I have been Harry overloaded. And you know what's weird? Because I'm going to be 50 this year. Okay. Let's get the backstory straight. My son the other day was like, Harry Styles had his birthday on February 1st. I happen to know that only because of TikTok. And he turned 29. And I said to duckling number two, oh my God, I'm 20 years older than Harry Styles. And he's like, ew, mom, disgusting. And I'm like, okay, you come to me when you're 49 and you got the hots for some little 29-year-old. And then we'll see how disgusting it is. Friend, yeah, right. Double standard guy.
Yeah, double totally. That is such a double standard.
And he did give it a good think. And I was like, see?
See what I mean?
And I love his talent, honestly, but I have this weird, like sadness in me. It's so bizarre. I can't believe I'm even talking about this, but I'm just going to out myself. It's a build up to something like a wedding or something, some big event where you've been planning and it's because his tour is coming to an end. Okay. And he's nowhere near North America anytime soon. And I took advantage of him being here twice.
Right.
And saw a show. And I just feel just like so sad that chapter of my life is over.
It's over.
But then you mentioned something to me earlier before we started recording.
He's on the call map. He's on the call map. So the Calm app is something that I never, you know, I think it's, well, I don't know what it is, but it's a parent thing. You know, when I got sober, I used Headspace to meditate a lot, which Drunk Daniel hated, but we meditated and we got through it. Right. Then I took a little TO from that. And with our kids, specifically our son is very, hard to put to bed. That's the putting it gently. Yeah. So
yes,
the Calm app has all of these sleep stories on it for everyone and meditations and the whole thing. It's just a great resource, I think. But
yeah,
we've gone through all of the kids' stories, you know, your classics like Cinderella and Peter Pan and sure. all of those, right? I'm like, sure. I can't listen to these anymore. Can we just look at a normal, like what are the options for the normal sleep stories?
Right.
Harry Styles is one of them. Matthew McConaughey is another one. And they they read you a bedtime story. And it's like 40 minutes long. My daughters are huge Harry Styles fans. Went to the concerts. My 7-year-old, she cannot. If you turn it on, she starts giggling. His voice is too deep. It's so deep. She's like in her feels. She's like, turn on something else. So like, she cannot contain herself.
I think that's how I might feel. I feel like there'd be nothing calming about Harry Styles reading me a book.
Yeah.
It would be like, doink, I'm awake. What else do I have to talk about?
But Matthew McConaughey's story is on repeat in our house right now.
Interesting. What specific story does he read? Do you know?
He tells a story called, he's like, hello. that was an English accent. It's called Wonder. Not to be confused with the Shawn Mendes song, but it's called the story called Wonder. It's about a girl and her grandfather watching the stars.
Interesting.
Yeah. Where did I go with this?
Is Samuel L. Jackson's rendition of Go the Fuck to Sleep on there?
Yeah, no, but it should be. It should be.
That's the gift I buy all of my people in my world that are having a baby. Like, right. I'll get them the real shower gift, and then I'll slide in a Go the Fuck to Sleep book. It's a classic.
It is a classic.
If you haven't seen it, it is a classic.
Well, and I think that so much of the adjustment and rationalization that I get still consistently from feedback from people is just sleep, you know, and we've talked about this before, getting used to going to sleep without an aid.
Right. You mean like a chemical aid?
Yeah. Or let me tuck you in, like not like an aid, like a chemical aid,
sleep elf.
Yeah, like a little sleep elf. He's like, you know,
hey Ralphie, get in here and tuck me in,
Ralphie. But since the vodka little sleep elf vodka, left, there was definitely a transition where I had to figure out how the fuck to go to sleep. And then I was just. I've just been sleeping, but then I forget, like kids are human. Kids are humans, turns out, and they have falling asleep. Yeah, I know, right? They have a hard time falling asleep. Calm app, now I'm fucking listening to it just on my own free will. Even after the kids are asleep, I'm like, all right, Matthew, let's do this.
You're on first name basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, all right. Yeah. Let's get to sleep.
all right. Yeah, it's basically a pep talk. It's a pep talk.
So let me ask you this. When you said chemical, obviously we don't use alcohol in the beginning of sobriety to get to sleep, but I was referring to like a medication.
Totally.
Did you ever participate in any of that? As of course, physician led.
Yeah, absolutely. I was given a mild anti-anxiety / sleep aid to take when I needed help going to sleep, which turns out was always at first. But I had to give them to my wife to give them to me.
Interesting.
Because I would eat them like fucking Tic Tacs.
Good for you though. That's huge that you saw that, recognized that.
I'm horrified with updosing, which is a term that I'm using, updosing is a term like where you take more than prescribed, right?
Yeah,
so
sure.
Hurt your back, you get, you know, some painkiller and you're like, well, it says take 3 a day. So I'll just take 3 right now.
Right. That's in one day.
It's in one day. And then the whole every 4 to 6 hours, like details. Yeah. Fuck that.
Yeah.
You know, details.
Right, that's so the fine print.
Updosing is definitely, for me, has always been, and it makes sense, like an escape, right? Like alcohol updosing. Like nobody, somebody commented this morning, which I actually like when people leave curious comments and not judgmental comments, because there's a way to approach the same exact answer in a different way. And the person just said, you know, I never understood why people want to take it beyond a good buzz to a blackout drunk. And not like, that's so stupid and you're, you know, but like, like actually curious. And I think that's the same reason that if given, if I was in charge of my own like medicine in that first month, I would have just treated it like I had been treating vodka.
Right.
Like I'm going to self-medicate, even though it's prescribed, I'm going to take as much as I think I need. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Never don't leave drunk Daniel in charge of medication.
No. Yeah. I hear you. I mean, I think there's lots of different, to go back to the comment, your commenter, I don't think we understand it either. I don't understand why I couldn't just be happy with a buzz. I don't understand that either. It's an excellent question. That is the question.
It's the question.
That's the unanswered question that you may never have the answer to. Like, and it's also could tie into the whole why of it, you know, if you like you and I have talked about that, if you don't have emotional trauma, if you didn't, you know, if you didn't go through something that triggered you to be a certain way, if you just had, if you had what you would describe as a typical upbringing or life, or even a good one,
right,
and then you are an addict,
right?
Yeah, it's like this unanswered question. And your commenter, that's a great question. I would love to know the answer to that question. I have no idea. Right.
Right. 100%. And I think I have a little bit more specific trauma, but I still have led a very, you know, life I'm grateful for in many ways, in most ways. So I could take it back to the origin of wanting to escape, but I'm going to, as somebody who has experienced significant trauma, I am a little tired of being trauma dumped on. So I think there is a reason, excuse me, there's a fine line. And this is just my experience. I could use trauma all day long and stay drunk all day long. And even since sobriety, I've experienced a lot of trauma. I lost another friend yesterday. You know, am I drunk? No. Right. So the answer I give a lot is like, I would use it to escape because I didn't want to feel a feeling I was feeling, but that's not that many days, you know, of the year and of the decades I was drinking. That's few and far between. There's most of the days I was just, why couldn't I stop after a good strong buzz? I have no idea.
Exactly.
I wasn't constantly in trauma. I wasn't constantly running from something. Right.
Exactly. And I think that's a really like open-ended question that a lot of us can't answer. Right. And also to go back to sleep and how you had to have your wife monitor your meds.
Right.
It's not like that for all addicts either. No. Like it's a really interesting thing where you don't want to test that, but not all alcoholics need someone to hold on to their sleep aid for them.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
And I'm not trying to over dramatize that. I just, at that point when I just said, I'm fuck it. Like I'm going to do what the doctors say. I'm going to really commit to this. I'm just going to see how I feel. I just didn't trust myself to be by myself or make decisions in that capacity because I had successfully failed at being in charge of my own healing and being in charge of stopping for too long. And I had just to say like, I need other people to support me. Right.
That's huge, Daniel. That's huge. That you needed people in your inner circle. I mean, it is so big to take a step aside and recognize that you need to be vulnerable in that way and that you need to release control in that way.
Right.
Because being an alcoholic, it sounds like an oxymoron, but for a lot of us, it's about control. Although you're completely out of control.
Yes.
it is about you feeling like you have the control of a situation a lot of times when you absolutely don't, and recognizing that, and then taking that a step further for you and involving people in like part of your recovery, which was, I need to sleep, I need to do it right. So here, partner, right, take care of this for me. Like that is big. A lot of people don't have the balls to do that, to put their pride aside or to put their, or admit they have that lack of control.
Right. You know? And people who don't have a partner or a spouse or someone to do right. that for them.
It's
right.
Just
and
up so, to them. Yeah, that's just a great point.
Up to you. And that is, those are people that I have mad respect for, because mm-hmm. at least I had and have that same person who was there to support me.
Right.
In real time, in real life. Right. Mm-hmm. I still think asking for help is the hardest part, you know? Like I work out, my trainer is always like, the hardest part about my workouts are actually me getting to the gym, you know? And it's true. Like that getting, yeah. just getting there. Once you're there, it's kind of like, once you finally ask for help, once you finally open the door to receive help, mm-hmm. I feel like the temperature shifts, the energy can shift slightly. It's not easy.
Right.
I'm like, oh, everything's fine now. I just asked for help yeah. and I'm good. Yeah. But, you know, it does change at least for me, I realized, okay, these people still love me, even though X, Y, Z, these people still are here to support me. And it held right. me accountable.
Yeah.
Because once you involve other people, you elevate your accountability.
For sure. And a lot of people in our lives want to play some kind of role. Like they have maybe been so confused about our addiction for so long, and wondering why you're doing what you're doing and this and that. And then you finally are bringing them in as having an active role in your recovery. And it's like this, like exhale for them. Like, okay, I'm in on this now. Like I'm not the person they're hiding from. I'm not the person they're lying to. I'm contributing,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. And it's the collaboration. And for me, so much of the drinking was isolative, right? Mm-hmm. Isolation.
Yeah.
I don't, and I always say this, but I don't know a lot of alcoholics or people who have quit drinking that were doing most of their drinking public facing. It's quite the opposite. It mm-hmm. seems like the common theme are people who are drinking alone, drinking in secrecy. And it's funny spending like several years being like, I'm fine, I don't have a drinking problem, I can quit whenever I want to. Hey, I need you just to like hide this medicine and just mm-hmm. give it to me once a night when I need it.
Right.
It's like a fucking 180.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But so better than a 360, which would have been just me
yeah.
self-medicating and just replacing one thing for another.
Right.
360 is when you turn in a circle. And
all the way around. Okay. Yeah. yeah. That's called transfer addiction, I've learned.
Yeah.
When you start. Yeah. So let's go back to your sleep habits. So was that right away, like during your conversations with your doctor that you've been open with us about mm-hmm. that you did that and involved your doctor? Was part of that they were like, here, let's try this for your sleep? Or did it take a little while? Are you struggling? Like, did you know right out of the gate, I'm going to need some help?
I knew, because I was in a pretty bad medical state with having had the hallucinations, which we've talked about, I think, enough. And then, mm-hmm. and the amount that I had been drinking, mm-hmm. right? I very well would have been accepted easily into like a detox, you know? But this goes
and
back
you didn't
to,
because why?
I don't know. Pride, denial, shame, being, you're going to take time off work to be a principal in treatment, you know? Versus if I had cancer and I took, and people knew that, there would be a fucking meal train. There would be no shame in the game at all, right? Different mm-hmm. disease, different reaction. So I think I was just, and a lot of it was just the denial. I think that's where I'll leave it. Ego and denial. But my doctor was very clear about like, giving me things to help me. And this is what you need to watch for. And this is, you know, kind of like, this is our game plan. And if, and should it turn this way or that way, you need to, you know, call me immediately. So I was in regular constant contact with Justin.
First day basis, are we?
Well, I don't want to say his last name because then I'm going to Google him.
Gotcha. Yeah. Dr. Justin.
And, you know, when I got my blood work done a few weeks ago, Dr. Justin, you know, he's still there for me, giving me fist bumps. Aww. Like, I'm so proud of you. Cool. You know,
that's awesome.
It's been really cool experience.
So you mentioned meditation and the Calm app. Yeah. But so is that, do you have a ritual? I know you talked about your breathing exercise that you do at bedtime. That was very early on. Maybe the OGs heard that episode.
Yeah.
But you have your nighttime walk. Like, you are very ritualistic.
I am. I have my nighttime walk. I have my hot water with lemon. Mm-hmm. My wife and I divide and conquer in terms of like a tuck-in schedule. We have a rotation. You know, so each of our kids have different nights that they get, like the first tuck in or second, who gets what, you know?
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Cause I feel at some point they're not going to want us to tuck us in. So I'm all in for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then after that, if I haven't fallen asleep in the, you know, tucking my kids in, which is like
really hard. You fall asleep with them, you mean?
Yes. I'm like, okay, well, I'll lay here with you and we'll listen to the sleep story. And the next thing you know, it's like 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, Lord. But at least I'm not in my underwear on the couch, right? So silver lining.
Yeah.
I just mosey back to my own.
It's a good
bed.
Trade-off. Yeah.
But I really don't have a hard time falling asleep anymore. I can go to sleep. I lay down, I'm annoying. And there's that meme that went around. My wife sent it to me the other day that snoring is basically like bragging about how well you can sleep. Yeah. Because I'll just like lay down. 37 seconds later, start snoring.
Sorry.
Wake up in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
But there was a long time when I couldn't sleep and I was really fixated on not being able to sleep. And what you focus on, you get more of. And my opinion is that 3 hours of sober sleep is better than 10 hours of drunk sleep. So when I cannot sleep, instead of, oh, poor me, I just, I throw on a meditation. I throw on whatever I'm in the mood for. Sleep story with Matthew, a guided meditation about breathing and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And I fall asleep.
How about early on though? Very early on in your sobriety.
Very early on.
That's a really common thing people want to talk about on the
on that's true. I apologize.
No, very it's okay.
Very early on, I did... I got Headspace, which was newer at the time, and they have all of these nightly courses and kind of like when you on an app that you might have for not drinking, it counts your days like streaks, you know, it would like give you like, oh, you've meditated 3 days in a row or 4 days in a row or, you know, and there you can and choose your own adventure, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes. And at the time, and I haven't been on the app, there was just one gentleman who did all of their airtime and he had an Australian accent or a South or like South African, Australian, some, so, you know, like one of those accents that have you at hello and would just like, and I just did that every single night until I had exhausted literally everything that you could do on that app.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I did that for like a year and a half.
Wow.
And I feel like I retrained my brain to be able to let itself go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But that was part of my ritual.
Along with a prescribed sleep aid or no?
Yeah, but I only use that sleep aid.
Occasionally, like desperate just in times.
In the very beginning.
Mm.
Because my primary fear was I wasn't going to be able to sleep. And so, well, here you go if you can't sleep. It's kind of like if there's a chance of rain, and you're out and about and you don't have an umbrella, all you think about is the fact that it could rain. Mm-hmm. But if you have an umbrella with you, you're like, I don't fucking care if it rains.
Yes. Yeah.
It was that. It was like he like Jedi'd me.
Right.
You know.
Manifestation.
Yeah. And it was just.
He Jedi'd me.
Yeah. It was like Dr. Justin fucking mind tricked me. But it worked because there were definitely the first few weeks I leaned on that. But it's not something I kept taking. It's not something I take now. I don't take anything for sleep.
That's great.
Yeah.
That sounds like a relatively, I don't want to downplay your struggles here, but it sounds like it was a relatively easy road for someone who was so heavy and in an addiction.
Yeah. I mean, I think it took,
but I mean, you were proactive about it.
It took me like 6 months. It took me like 6 months to really get into a healthy sleep cycle. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a good hefty amount of time.
Yeah. Where generally I wasn't thinking, where I wasn't thinking about it, where it wasn't, where I let go of, I'm not going to get enough sleep. And I would just always redirect myself. Well, Dana, you never got enough sleep. You only got drunk sleep. Like the same drunk math that you would do, like you were so good at with sleep. Like I was hyper fixated and I had to actually flip that narrative to make it to my own advantage. Mm-hmm. You're still getting like 7 hours of sleep. Like who cares? Right. Get up. Right. Listen to something, watch something, read something. Who cares? At least you're not drunk.
Yeah. And I think the way I feel sometimes when I don't get much sleep at night, which is rare anymore, I sleep pretty well for the most part. I do have some restless sleep issues, you know, where I wake up several times throughout the night. But I'm always anticipating having this like horrible day. It's going to be awful. If I only get 5 hours of sleep, I'm going to be suffering. And it's never like you're extra tired the next night, but it's never this extreme. You know, I really psych myself out. Like, totally. And then I'll lay there like, go to sleep. Like, even if you get a, you know, if every night you're getting not enough sleep, that's different. But here and there, it's not debilitating. But do you remember, I mean, I have a very vivid memory of one night specifically towards the end of my active addiction. I would say it was in the last couple months before I finally surrendered. But I got, you know, I was drinking all day. It was one of those things. Uh-huh. And you feel sleepy until you pass out for 2 hours and then you wake up and then you're wide freaking awake.
Fucking Energizer Bunny. Like, hey, what are we doing?
Yes. Right. Yes. At like 1 or 2 a.m. And I remember opening my phone and watching. I was watching a Prince tribute. Crying like a baby, laying in bed on like a Wednesday night, 2 a.m., crying like a baby, missing Prince, you know, still half drunk probably from the night before, and just feeling so gross and desperate and like, just like, what are you doing? What is this moment? Like, and just feeling so full of anxiety and stress in that moment. And I did get back to sleep, I know, because, and then how about when you wake up and you open your phone back up and whatever your last window was open pops up.
Purple rain. Like, oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's funny to think about now, but then it was just like brutal. Yeah.
There was time, and that's where when I was drinking, the hardest nights for me were the more mundane, where I would accidentally get the drunkest or intentionally, subconsciously, whatever, Thursdays and Sundays, always. Thursdays and Sundays. Mm-hmm. And Sundays were for me, subjectively, worse, because Friday you could just like it, you know, whatever. But a Sunday night drunk, sneak attack drunk, like where I'm just going to have a few. Okay. And then at 3 a.m. I was up and I really couldn't fall back asleep.
Right.
I really couldn't fall back asleep. So in addition to being extremely dehydrated and anxious and just defeated, I was also exhausted because let's say I passed out at like 10. So from 10 to 3, you get 5 hours of really drunk sleep and that's it.
Yeah.
So that's the reference point I always go back to when I'm thinking, poor me and my sober sleep, I can't sleep. You weren't fucking sleeping anyways.
Right.
You know, and who cares? Like, get over it. You know, you weren't sleeping anyways.
Yeah, exactly. So
Keep moving.
I just feel like people are so focused on getting, like they quit drinking and they're like, okay, I'm going to get some really great solid sleep. And they don't. And when you hyperfixate on it, like we're saying, it just makes it that much worse. I mean, it's not going to end you if you don't get some solid sleep for a little while. And people will be like, I've been sober for 2 weeks, which is amazing. I'm not saying it's not an unbelievable accomplishment. That's totally awesome. I've been sober for 2 weeks. I'm still not sleeping well.
Correct.
And you know, you don't want to be that guy that's like, okay, well, you have to give it another couple months. Sorry.
Yeah, like, I know. Sometimes I don't like to answer those questions, the timeline questions.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Well, everyone's so different too.
Everyone's so different, but like my second year of sobriety was harder than my first.
Mm-hmm.
And people, they're like, talk about a buzzkill, you know, if they're early on.
Yeah,
you
don't want it. Yeah, yeah.
In the whole,
I feel great. Yeah.
I'm like, just wait till next year, motherfucker. You know, the whole pink cloud syndrome.
Yes.
Which mm-hmm. I never experienced a significant pink cloud. I think it was more, I described it more like a tide. It came in, came mm-hmm. out. Parts of the day were easy. Parts of the day were hard, or a few days at best, either way. Right. Mm-hmm. But the sleeping thing, I feel like, and I know I did this when I was, it's a little bit like mining for excuses to go back to drinking.
Mm.
I'm just going to, and I don't mean to make anyone uncomfortable here, but people will start being like, well, this isn't better and this isn't better and that isn't better. Like instantly, I guess I'll just go back to drinking.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a while. It's a progressive mm-hmm. process, just like it took you a long time to get to where you are right now or where you were. It's going to take you not as long, but it's going to take time mm-hmm. to get out of that, to get right. back to a life or to rediscover or almost a brand new life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
In a lot of ways. And that's like, okay. And that's why I encourage people to spend money on themselves that they would have spent on drinking mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. it gives you that return on investment, that instant gratification that we're always right. seeking.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent point.
What was your relationship with sleep? Did you take a sleep aid?
I did. And I occasionally still do. And that's what was prompting me to say to you that not everyone that has had a problem with alcohol will always have a problem with like benzos and things like that. And I know that's a really scary thing for people to hear. And I'm not making any suggestions here. Let's be crystal fucking clear about the necessity to speak to your medical professionals.
Correct.
But that being said, I had a panic attack a few years before I got sober. Had nothing to do with alcohol. Something was going, I was going through a thing. I didn't even feel it coming. I thought I was having a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And I was prescribed a benzo for that, for like a quick fix kind of thing. Correct. If I needed it. And I was never someone that was interested in using medications mm-hmm. to get high or to feel that. It scared me more than anything, which is unusual for a nurse because we know so many nurses get addicted to, you know, narcotics and things like that because of the availability and, you know, just it's a whole convoluted thing.
Right.
But and I actually didn't. I wasn't, they make me feel sleepy. That's how they affect me. And I didn't, people like to compare benzos to alcohol because of that effect.
Right.
But alcohol, I didn't use it to make me feel relaxed. I used it to feel more amped, you know, and to feel more excited and feel like I was having my own little party. So I didn't like the way that those meds made me feel like drowsy.
Right.
I was like, this sucks. Like, I feel like a zombie. I didn't feel like a zombie when I was drinking.
Right. And that's like the drug of choice kind of conversation, right? People have their drug of choice and it affects. Some people gravitate or react well to one and not the other. And mm-hmm. I mean, there was a phase where I was like, okay, I'm not going to drink. I'm just going to smoke weed.
Right.
Yeah. No, it was not. I went out to dinner with my wife and I had, you know, eaten a Jolly Rancher that was had THC in it, and I didn't read the instructions or anything. I had no concept of how much to take. And when we got to the restaurant, I couldn't read the menu. I couldn't speak either. I was just
like, I'm blind.
I was so high and it was horrible. And I'm like, I can't, this isn't going to work for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not, and there, I had no desire to ever do it again.
Right. And you know, people will say addicts have addictive personalities, right?
Totally.
And in a lot of ways that's true, but it doesn't mean that anything and everything that we can get our hands on is going to be something we're going to go from 0 to 100.
Right. I think if you find something that you like to do, healthy, unhealthy, then I'm more prone to go all in on anything. Right. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm going to do a podcast, I'm going to do a podcast. If I'm going to create a TikTok channel, I'm going to go all in. But if it's like something that I'm not just like, you know, looking for anything and everything. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I'm a selective addict.
Yeah. Snob.
Yeah.
You're snobby. God.
Yeah. I'm a bit snobby addict.
Yeah. I did struggle with sleep for a while, but not as long as you, not anywhere near as long as you did. I struggled with, I think it was more my stress level and anxiety when I went to bed because I was thinking straight. I finally had clear thoughts when my head would hit the pillow versus, you know, slumbery, like, okay, now it's time, you know, to embrace this relaxed feeling. Cause I was always on the go when I was drinking. I wasn't sitting around. I wasn't laying around. Oh. Sometimes I would lay down and take a little snooze and pop back up and, you know, keep going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but like, that's impressive. If I laid down at all when I was drinking, it was that.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't always like that. Don't get me wrong. But if I'm a woman on the move, I have an agenda, you know, I've got shit to do. And alcohol was a part of that for me. It didn't interrupt that or cause me to not get those things done. You know what I mean?
Well, as evidenced by our last episode, when you did your fucking meal prep while you were blacked out.
I was roasting vegetables and baking
made
my
a
chicken.
Soup in the slow cooker. Yeah.
That is no joke. Like that was for real how I was behaving. So when I would finally hit the bed and my head would hit the pillow, then it would come on and I would be, you know, forced into a sleep at an alcohol induced sleep, but I didn't have the energy anymore to start thinking too hard about anything at that point. So when I first got sober and I would lay down and I would really, those thoughts and that anxiety and all of the stress that we put on ourselves the second we're supposed to start relaxing, you know, like most people, it all comes rushing in and that's what would keep me awake. It wasn't that, you know, I didn't use alcohol to go to sleep, but it did, you know, enhance my ability to be able to sleep. So
I didn't use it as a sleep aid, like, because I feel like that's like, in that context, it sounds to me, if you say it like, oh, I need it for sleep, that you don't drink anything until you're about to go to bed. Right. And then you have a glass of Cabernet and call it a night.
Yeah.
No, I was drinking like all the way up until bedtime.
Right.
And then I'm like, fuck, I only get this many hours of sleep. It was like, I have to go to sleep now.
Yeah. I don't have a choice. I have to.
Party's over till tomorrow, I guess.
That's why people would have like a nightcap, right? Isn't that what that's why it's called that? A nightcap?
I would call it a nightcap just to, and it would like jingle jangle. I'd take my vodka up the steps. But that wasn't like my first drink. That was like the fucking season finale.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. We had a morning cap, an afternoon cap, a dinner cap.
I had a lot of caps. Yeah. Just caps everywhere.
But that's where that phrase comes from, I think, having a nightcap is because for most quote unquote,
those are the same people
drinkers,
that say tannins.
Yes. They would use alcohol to help them get to sleep. Yeah, exactly. With all the tannins, smoky, fucking tobacco, oaky, pokey. Oh my God. So yeah, the anxiety is what kept me from sleeping for a long time. And I didn't do anything too ritualistic like you did. I would try to, I'd use white noise and shit like that, you know, which I still do sometimes, but.
Oh yeah. Our house sounds like a fucking like wind tunnel. Every bedroom has a fucking like rainforest or like jet engine.
Fan. Yeah.
If somebody broke in the middle of the night, they'd be like, there's like owls.
Where's the landing pad? Yeah.
Like, oh fuck. There's an owl in here.
That's so great. But I think just generally speaking, it's, you just have to wait it out. Right. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. And I, but that's where I had to really meditate because my therapist was like, I'm still to this day a very anxious person. And my brain has to be an employee of my body essentially. So rather than the other way, like I have to tell my brain it's time to go to sleep. Like my body's tired, turn it off. Mm-hmm. That's so easy to say and so hard to do in my experience. So the ritual of having the meditation every single night, it built a habit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's shit. Like my dad, Jim, would say, like, you got to do it every day for 21 days for it to be a habit.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Jim. And then Jim's right.
Yeah,
Jim's right.
Jim is right.
Jim had it right. And I did that. And now I'm just, you know, I just gave in to all the shit that I felt like I was too good for. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to meditate. Ugh.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, fucking like, where was I?
Right. Guided imagery. You're like, oh, that's right. I was walking down this beach path.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Oh yeah. I was in the rainforest.
Let me get back there. You gotta just do what works for you. You know what I mean? Just do what works for you. Reading is a great one. That puts me right the fuck to sleep. Embarrassingly enough, I'm like, I'm gonna really get into this book. It's like a murder. People are getting like slaughtered and I'm like,
suspense thriller.
Yeah. Passed like, out. Wow, that's sleepy.
Yeah, I'm sleepy.
Thanks, Spindrift.
Yeah, Spindrift coming in clutch. We really appreciate
our first
you.
First app.
Yeah,
sponsored app. It's very
And when we get more details, we do have discount codes that people can use to order online to save a few bucks, and some of the flavors are hard to get in the stores. So, but this is like much easier when you order direct. And we will, I don't know what you're supposed to do. We'll put them in the show notes. People say that. I don't know what that means. We'll fucking get them to you somehow. I have no idea. I think that's the, when you describe it.
Okay.
But I hear people, when I listen to podcasts, they talk about show notes. I'll link this in the show notes. Way over my pay scale.
Yeah, I don't think we have show notes. Let's keep it that way. Can we, please?
I agree.
I don't want show notes.
Well, neither do I. We'll just tell you at some point when we
learn. Just tell you.
We'll just tell you and you can write it down in the notes on your phone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Use a pen.
Here's a pen. We'll catch you with episode 20 next week. Thank you everybody for tuning in to Sobriety Uncensored.